Hi, this is Caleb Lundquist, multimedia editor at The Chronicle, here with The Chronicle's first podcast of the 2017-2018 academic school year. I'm here with Andrea Hayden, College Democrats president, and Grant Tudor, a member of College Republicans. We're here to discuss the politics of America as it has become in terms of landscape since the 2016 election, and prior to that, and sort of like the way that the political landscape has changed and how it affects us as millennials, and then in general the American population. So to begin, our first discussion point is going to be about sort of how the landscape has changed since the 2016 election. I'm going to put this toward Andrea first. So the 2016 election seemed to morph the political landscape. Candidates interacted with each other and the media in vastly different ways than previous elections. This seemed to affect the public as well. Certain groups along either side of the political spectrum began speaking up and rallying behind their respective candidates. The result seems to be a more polarized political state. The right has drawn further right and the left has drawn further left. Andrea, how do you feel about this continued separation? Do you think it's just a symptom of the election that'll sort of fade in time, or is it one of a more underlying problem in America?
It definitely is like disappointing that we are as polarized as we are. It's definitely really hard to be bipartisan anymore. It's especially really hard to be a moderate, to consider yourself a moderate, because there is the left side and the right side, and there's really not much in between. It's really an underlying problem of America that just really got amplified with the 2016 election. Social media, everything like that, just kind of really projected that. And it's really strange just how we've gotten here. I think that it's going to be hard to unite it back together, but it's possible. Okay. It's possible.
Interesting. All right, Grant, what are your thoughts there?
I agree with Andrea. I think the continued separation is extremely ineffective to solving issues that we're facing. And It's also unfortunate because it doesn't represent the bulk of America, which is largely independent. They don't like being labeled one left, right, or the other, and that's really unfortunate. And I think that the radical few from each side are almost getting the most coverage, they're getting the most representation, and that's not what most people are. I'm sure it doesn't represent anyone in this room. And I think that people just need to relax and realize that we're really not that different in a lot of ways. And a political party doesn't define a large number of people, and it surely doesn't define me.
Right. No, that's a good point. And that actually leads a little bit into like the next point, which is sort of about the way media interaction between the public and these candidates sort of affected this polarization that you both just commented on. So, with this past election and sort of the months following, particularly between like the executive branch's interaction with the media in terms of the White House, we've seen things like certain concepts come about, like such as fake news by President Trump. And while I want to sort of put that aside, I want to focus on the way like media can bias us toward our respective parties and sort of like put us into a sort of bubble on our respective sides of the spectrum. So I think it's fair to say that the majority of Republicans and Democrats, or just people who are more conservative or more liberal in their ideologies, tend to get their news from a series of popular news networks, whether it's through television in the evening, such as more conservative people watching Fox News, or more liberal people and Democrats going online and reading like the New York Times or watching CNN in the evenings. We seem to gravitate toward whatever news site or network is going to present stories in a way that we find appealing or that we agree with. How strong would you guys say that this media bias is? Not in terms of what they're covering, but in the way that it affects their viewers. How is it that they present the material to their respective audiences? Because I'm sure they know that the people watching are of the same party that they're trying to support. And do you guys think that they are responsible or partly responsible for this separation that we see? And as Andrea mentioned, this sort of like gap that's created where now being a moderate is sort of a thing of the past. And we'll start that with Grant.
Sure. I think media bias is absolutely out of control, and both sides are absolutely at fault in this particular instance.
Mm-hmm.
It seems today, viewers, listeners, or whatever the situation may be, they're only there to confirm their beliefs. Most people aren't open to even hearing another side, which is, it's extremely unfortunate. And I myself really try to, even if I'm not going to agree with it, I try and hear the other side's perspective, because it's going to be so ineffective in so many ways if we don't open up and hear someone else's view.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I remember hearing recently that there was so much coverage on President Trump getting two scoops of ice cream instead of one, and then how President Obama's daughter went out to a party. I mean, it's useless info. Nobody really cares, and it's
right.
not real news.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I guess, for better or for worse, fake news is out there.
Right.
And it's important to look, like I was saying, it's really important to look at both sides, even if we don't agree. We have to try.
Yeah.
And I think if we really do try, and if we really do hear the other side out, we're gonna see a lot of compromise, and we're gonna come to the middle and really find some common ground.
And talking about what you mentioned earlier in that response, you seem to touch upon like some of the stories that are being generated and being reported on aren't even for the effect of like informing the people. They're really just
taking
sort of
a
like,
jab.
Yeah, taking a jab, exactly. Andrew, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to definitely agree. It contributes to the fact of polarization. If you watch Fox News, you're going to be watching things that you believe in and that contribute to that. And same thing with CNN or even like reading things online. You're going to trust the people. You trust newscasters. So if they say something, you're going to take that as fact, and you're going to use that in your everyday life.
Right.
So I think it's just really important for people to fact check if you hear something that you think, I wonder if that's actually true. Do the research, find out if that's actually true, not through Twitter. Don't go on Twitter to try to find that information. I feel like that's a go-to, like, let me check Twitter to see what's going on in the world. Like, actually find as unbiased media as you can, fact check, figure out like how you stand on it, and then make a thought based on that, rather than I saw this on Fox News or CNN or the Washington Post or the New York Times, so it must be fact. That's exactly how the world works, because media, they show you what they know you want to hear. They get money off of that. So
right. Exactly. And so Grant, Andrea touched on it a little bit there about sort of like making efforts to ensure that you're hearing the other side. And you mentioned that too, you take the time to sort of, even if you don't agree, you want to understand what the other where the other person's coming from. How would other people who want to be informed and stay within their own party and still abide by the beliefs that they have, but also understand where the other side's coming from, what would be like some practices that they might be able to do in order to achieve that?
I think honestly it's just with as biased as news sources can be, it's just look at everything you can. I mean, I totally agree with her when she was saying don't trust Twitter. I mean, there's so much stuff out there that is it's just, you can't rely on it. And
right.
Some of the larger news sources, while they may be well written, some of these independent news sources are actually very well informed too.
Right.
I mean, I know there's an international one, BBC, that I listen to. It seems to lean in the middle, and I think really anything you can do, listen to different opinions, listen to different sources, and as long as you're trying, that's the best you can do.
Right. Yeah, I think that there's an important difference also between some of those news networks. They have like, there's a difference between like a news anchor who's delivering the news and someone who's giving their opinion about it and who's sort of reporting on it with guests who are coming in to discuss it.
True, and different anchors and different
exactly.
hosts. Yeah.
So everyone presents a different view.
I definitely think also just like talking to real life people, like talk to people who are your age, say, how do you feel about this? What do you think? Rather than taking all the information that you get through media and then just keeping that internalized and thinking that that's how the world works. Because not every Republican is as conservative and as crazy as they make them see on TV. Same thing with liberals. We're not all like liberal snowflakes that think the ways that they portray us in the media.
Right.
So definitely just like talk to real life people and have those difficult conversations, because it really helps get rid of some of that bias that exists.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so as part of the millennial generation, as you two are and as I myself am, do you feel that like this polarization affected our generation more so than it did other generations, where people might argue that American citizens were already pretty set in their ways, but as you're growing up and like sort of being a teenager and branching into adulthood, you sort of are forming those important opinions that'll decide your political stance. Do you think that like we get a big influx of media attention during a presidential election, and in the months that follow, there's a certain like heightened sense of like what's going on in politics? And in a world today where like we have so much technology and we're able to access it in so many different ways and it's just constantly being flooded into us, do you think that that affects our generation, since we sort of like grew up parallel with technology, so we're always in contact with it, whether it's by phones or computers? Do you think that that increases the chance of us being biased by the media and sort of being swayed by it? Or do you think it's something that affects everybody on all age levels? And we'll start with Andrew.
I think it can affect everybody on all age levels, but I think especially with this election, if you were a Republican, you were a Republican. If you were Democrat, you were Democrat. Like this election was the first time that I ever voted. So I definitely was like looking at all the different news sources and different perspectives to kind of see like, where do I necessarily align, because I'm not sure. So I definitely think when you have media that is so biased one way or the other, depending on what you're reading, millennials, those of us who hadn't voted before or are still trying to figure it out, where we're trying to figure it out from is very polarized. So if you hated Donald Trump and you saw rhetoric on Twitter that said that, then that's maybe how you felt. Or same thing could be said for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or, you know, anyone. So I definitely think that we were maybe affected a little bit more than how an adult who has been through other elections and has actually voted multiple times, they know how to kind of navigate that area. We necessarily maybe didn't, depending on if you grew up in a household that talked about politics or not. So I definitely think that that kind of contributes to how maybe millennials voted or how we kind of feel about the political system now.
Okay. And Grant, what about you? What do you think about that?
Could you repeat the question again?
Yeah. Oh. So do you think that like millennials were affected more so by this media coverage of the election and in the months that have occurred since then, in terms of media affecting our biases and sort of like fielding us into specific camps, whether on the right or the left?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think for me personally, I grew up in a very split political household. My mom is a Democrat, my dad is a Republican, and both of them were giving me, you know, insight and, you know, their thoughts and everything, and that's what kind of really drives me to check out both sides.
Right.
And I think that, yeah, definitely being a millennial, we're heated. We really want to get involved. We want to be knowledgeable. We want to understand everything. And
Right. That's
hard when we have so much, so many different news sources, so many different opinions being thrown right at us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's almost harder to decipher what's right, what's wrong. Instead, it's not black and white anymore. It's not Democrat or Republican. And it's really tough.
Right. No, I agree. All right, so I'd like to shift gears a little bit here and talk about a concept that has gained a lot of attention with the recent president, Trump, but has been a topic of discussion in politics really since, one could argue, like all the way back when George W. Bush was a president and signed certain executive orders, and that's actually the concept that I want to talk about, is the executive order. They've sort of gained a lot of popularity in terms of like their use and like their coverage by the media, and it seems that recently there have been executive orders both by Obama and by President Trump that seem to extend the powers of the presidency. Now, executive orders have been upheld by the Supreme Court for some time that they have to be supported by the Constitution, whether from like a clause granting specific power or by Congress delegating such by amendments. And the judicial system, as we've seen recently, can place injunctions on executive orders, and of course Congress can just pass legislation overriding an order that they disagree with. So what would be both of your opinions on the power of executive orders that have sort of been gained in modern day? It seems to me that with both Obama and Trump, that presidents are acquiring the ability to simply bypass Congress on a lot of things. When Congress is supposed to be sort of the branch that holds the power to pass laws, we now have the executive branch being able to say, well, I want this to go into effect, and as long as it's within the clause of power within the Constitution, I'm just going to sign it in. And yeah, it might only last for a short while, but I have the power to do that. Do you think that that's a dangerous power to give to, you know, an office that has one man at its, one man or woman at its helm? Or do you think that it's something that it may be controversial at times, but really it's a power that should be delegated to that branch? We'll start with Grant on that.
I think it's... I don't know what the right thing to do is in this instance. I think, obviously, we're in a very split environment. I feel that each president is, they're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to do what they think is best. And it doesn't mean it's right, but we're so polarized in whether it's Congress or the Senate or even the presidency, it's, they might just see it as a way to move forward and just get things done. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, also stimulates polarization, because
right.
if they do that without, you know, an executive order is kind of just get it done, get it done now. And that causes uprisings. People are thinking, what are you doing? What are you saying? And that's for either instance. Mm-hmm. But I think there's not, I don't personally have a solution. I don't know what's
maybe
right.
There
exactly.
isn't one, you know?
And maybe there isn't one. And I think the topic should be definitely discussed, and as any issue needs to be discussed. But
right.
I think there is a solution in the future, really, but yeah.
And real quick, Andrea, just to respond to Grant here, you mentioned like the whole polarizing, and it sort of goes beyond just the public, because the public has, you know, in with a lot of these controversial executive orders in pretty much the recent decade, they've reacted, you know, passionately or whatnot, but it can also cause rifts amongst party leaders, as we've seen with, not to cite anything specific, but in President Trump's presidency, we've seen some executive orders that have been passed that have sort of not caused like disagreement between himself and some of the Republican Congress leaders, but certainly caused like a sort of surprise or invoked a bit of restlessness in the party, where they sort of like, he either took the jump on them and they didn't really understand, you know, they weren't aware that he was going to do that, or it just sort of like, they seem like they were on different wavelengths at that time. So it doesn't seem to just, you know, it doesn't just apply to the public. It applies to other levels of government. These executive orders can sometimes, like, cause little rifts and little, like, disturbances amongst even your own party, as we've seen. So, Andrea, what do you think about all this, about executive orders?
I definitely don't think that the framers, when they made our Constitution, ever anticipated that executive orders would be a thing.
Right.
Or maybe if they had an idea of it, that they would not be used the way that they are being used. I love the framers, so like
right.
I always bring it back to that. Like,
of course.
But yeah, now it's almost necessary to use executive orders. I mean, the president has to act unilaterally because Congress can't work together.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to add in another factor to that to get anything done?
Right.
So that's a tool that the president can use, and the next president can get rid of it when he comes into office. I mean, we saw that when Trump came into
right.
office. It's definitely a tool that I think presidents almost have to use
mm-hmm.
because being so polarized, there really isn't any other choice. If you want to try to get things done the way that they're supposed to in the system, it's just not going to happen, or happen at a rate that is wanted by like a president.
Right, or effective. So. it almost sounds like the rise in the use or the sort of like the extent of these executive orders has come as a result of the intensified like gridlock of Congress. So as Congress gets more into a stalemate and sort of like divided, we see presidents having to use more executive orders in order to show that there is some progress being made in whatever respect that may be. And it's very interesting. So dwelling on all this, it seemed to me that the political landscape in America can follow one of three paths. And I'm simplifying in order to, you know, make this work. But so if it continues the way it is, both parties will pull further away from one another until the term moderate is obsolete or used to describe someone who is what was once a standard Democrat or standard Republican. I think the second possibility is that both parties lock themselves where they are and maintain or establish mindsets of this sort of like my way or the highway kind of thing, which causes progress to gridlock, which we're already seeing a little demonstration of with Congress, both the Senate and the House. Or third, and the one that I think people really want to strive for, but it's tough, is that both parties slowly return toward the middle through meaningful conversations, such as what this podcast has demonstrated. So beginning with Andrea, sort of close us out, how do you think both parties in general can return toward the middle and lessen this polarized state of American politics? And I'd like to start by starting with Andrea and then going to Grant, and then again starting with Grant and going back to Andrea, have you guys reflect on your individual party that you belong to and what you think that that party in general and the people who make up that party and the people who have more liberal or conservative ideas could do, and then sort of flip that around and say what you think that the other party could do in order to also sort of like extend their hand, reach across the aisle. So start with Andrea reflecting on what the Democrats could do.
Oh, geez. I don't know. That's kind of a hard question simply because, I mean, we are so polarized and we do mm-hmm. want to live in a world where we can come back together and it's right. so great and we get along. And I mean, I don't think that's coming for a very long time. I think on the Democratic end, it's give and take. Right. So on certain issues, you may have to give up something in order to get what you want. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to see a little bit more of that. Not saying that anyone should ever stop fighting for what they believe in, because I definitely think you have to keep your morals and you have to keep your values of through course. The entire thing. But just realizing that the other side, they are not bad people. Mm-hmm. They're humans. We are all in this together, right. essentially. So just realizing that just because they have different ideas than you doesn't mean that what they believe is necessarily wrong. Mm-hmm. So just give and take, figure out ways that we can work together rather than just speaking out against the other side and really doing nothing effective to actually bring like both parties together.
Right. All right. And Grant, what about the Republicans?
You know, there are different kinds of Republicans from, excuse me, all the ones I know. And I think that most Republicans like myself can agree that most extremists, whether it be on the right or on the left, need to stop getting all the media coverage because it doesn't represent a majority of anyone.
Very true.
And I think the more coverage these extremists get, the more the more of a following they create. Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous, right. especially in today's political climate. I think everyone just needs to slow down, relax, and realize that we can still get along while disagreeing on some of these issues. Because I have friends who are Democrats, I have friends who are Republicans, and it truly and honestly does not affect how we go about our lives.
Right.
And I think it's unfortunate because I know people who won't speak to each other anymore because they know they lean to the right or lean to the left. Mm-hmm. And I think it's ridiculous. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And the mainstream Republicans I know have all denounced these, every single one, actually.
Yeah.
They have denounced alt-right groups, as have I, and recognizing that they don't represent normal Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased to actually hear from the Democratic side that the Berkeley mayor and the House leader have also condemned the alt-left, which is,
right.
which is huge. You need to hear it from the leaders. And
yeah.
I think that really starts a driving force for how we can really reconnect.
Okay. And so going back to you, before we go back to Andrea, what would you say, like, if you had to, like, sort of step into the shoes of the Democratic Party, like, does anything come to mind there in terms of, like, what you think that they could be doing better to sort of, like, lean back toward the middle and sort of meet you guys halfway in that sense?
I think that really... This can go for both sides. I think we need to stop keeping a little bubble on Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
That, as Andrea mentioned earlier, that not all Democrats are snowflakes, not all Republicans are crazy radicals.
Right.
And I think that from Democratic or Republican sides, we need to realize that most people don't agree with every single thing in the party.
Right.
And I certainly don't, and I certainly will say there are certain issues that I'm a little touchier on than others as far as leaning right or left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really from not just stepping into a Democrat but a Republican shoes as well, we really could just stop labeling each other these crazy nicknames or crazy little things that come to mind. I mean,
yeah.
Thinking back 30, 40 years ago, some of these issues that we have now are just, they're ridiculous, and they didn't exist back then. I think we really need to slow down, relax, like I mentioned before, and just really realize what we're arguing about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andrea, what do you think the Republicans could do to drift back toward the middle?
I know, it's such a hard question. Like, you never want to say, like, oh, you need to do this,
right,
and you need to do that, because we are all human. We are all... viable to life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like he said, I'm not wholly liberal on some issues and I'm not, like, wholly conservative on others. So you go back and forth. And for me to say, Republicans, like, you need to step up and do this, is kind of hypocritical for me to say, simply because my own party has its own things that it has to do. I think definitely just going back to, we have to work together, and we have to realize that this isn't a one party versus the other. And that's what's so hard about the American political system, is we only have two parties.
Right.
You really can't subscribe to anything else other than Republican or Democrat. If you're outside of those lines, you essentially, like, don't belong to anything. So I think just everyone realizing that it doesn't matter who the president is, it doesn't matter what house it has the majority, just realizing that it's about what we can do to better the American people and to make life good for those who live in this country and those who maybe want to come into this country from other places. I think it's definitely important that we just hear each other out, have conversations like we're having right now, and just realize that it's not about us, and I say us as in, like, our party. We have to broaden those horizons and figure out what we can do to work together rather than apart.
Right. Well, I think that that's a great note to end on from both of you. I'd like to thank them both again for coming. Andrea Hayden, from President of College Democrats, and Grant Tudor from College Republicans. Thank you both for being here. It was a lot of fun. This is Caleb Lundquist of The Chronicle. Thank you for listening to the first podcast. Be sure to check back ncclinked.com for more podcasts, as well as checking out our articles, videos, and other content. And if you want to join either College Republicans or College Democrats, you can look for their signups around campus or get in touch with either of the individuals who were interviewed today to talk more about that. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good day.